joining us on the WBGO Journal are three fabulous filmmakers. Two of them happen to be married, Ralph and Zelda Patterson, and their film Being Gladys will be shown right here in Newark. Is all these films part of the Women in Media Newark Women's History Month Film Festival, the 10th annual. First of all, I'd like to welcome Ralph and Zelda to the show. Your film being screened Wednesday, March 27th at the Newark Museum, Being Gladys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And joining us from the University of Dayton, one of my favorite places when I visited many years ago, the assistant professor in the Department of Communication and award-winning filmmaker as well, and an interdisciplinary artist, Jessica Inez Simmons, joins us from the University of Dayton on the phone. Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica's film is one of very much note here at WBGO, as it is all about the Chicago singer Mary Lane, one of the last living legends of American blues, and her film will be screened right here at WBGO, and that will be coming up on April 5th. And the title of that film, I Can Only Be Mary Lane. So thanks for all three of you joining us here on the WBGO Journal.
Sure.
Let's start off with Being Gladys, since that's the first film that will be screened on Wednesday, March 27th at the Newark Museum, shortly after 5 o'clock. This is a story about an artist who has worked right here in Newark and has done so much. And what I love about when I read the background of your film is the fact that being 95 years old, Gladys Barker Grower, am I saying her name correctly?
Mm-hmm. You are.
Yes. Okay. Gladys Barker Grower is not a little old lady. She is spry, and she is still working. Tell us why you wanted to do this film, Ralph.
Well, we wanted to do it because we had a chance to discover a woman who was considered an icon in Newark, and she was open to it. And she was brought into our filmmaker's workshop and announced that she was 94 at the time. And everybody was stunned, and we turned around, and Pamela Morgan, who runs Women in Media Newark, matched her with other icons of history. And we said, this could be a very good project for our group. And she was so open, and she was so relevant. Despite her age, she was just a marvel. So we said, let's find out who she is, and let's see what she's talking about.
Her work, Zelda, what is it about the work of Gladys Barker Grower that touched you as you started to do research for your film?
She is so committed to social justice and the dignity of all human beings, no matter what station in life you are. So this is Gladys, and she was... I don't quite know how to characterize it, but all throughout her life, there were people who told Gladys that she couldn't do this and she couldn't do that. And at every step of the way, Gladys did what they told her she couldn't do. So this is just a marvelous woman, some woman we would want all women to know and to emulate. She's just that type of person. She's inspirational.
Now, before you started looking into Gladys Barker Grower, had you seen any of her work anywhere? Were you curious at all?
I had not. I had not seen her work. She started to share some of it, and some of it really touched me. And the fact that she always followed her heart, what she wanted to do and who she was in her life. So that's what prompted me to explore her, and her artwork demonstrates that. Many of her pieces have to do with, she has one piece where there's a gentleman who lives in a cardboard box, and he was in New York City, and as the garbage collectors come around, they run over stuff, and they ran over his house and ran over him. And she did this project that talked about this man's house, and how it was destroyed and his life was destroyed because they didn't recognize it. So even her children say that. They're moved by how their mother approaches and touches individuals who are homeless on the street. One of her sons said, there's no difference in how she talks to these individuals, how she recognizes them with such dignity. So that has prompted me to know even more about Gladys.
Yeah.
In your film, Being Gladys, she even talks about why she uses certain materials, like cardboard.
And that's where I really started using corrugated to represent the poor, the homeless, that all the things that corrugated was. It was a blanket, it was a mattress, it was a shelter.
I would say that there was a certain, there's a paradox about it, but there was a certain advantage in not knowing her work and discovering it as we went into the project. I think, in fact, that I had seen some of her work and didn't recognize it as hers as we got into it. But the fact that she works with so many different kinds of media over the years has been exciting to note, too. Things that range from watercolor to recycled plastic bags. It's pretty amazing.
You know, as we hear both Zelda and Ralph Patterson talk, you already get the sense that these two have really done their homework. And for those here in Newark, certainly know of some of their work they've already done, award-winning work that they've done on films about Newark. And then you also hear Ralph's voice and you say, wow, why was he a camera guy? Because he should have been the talent. He did all those wonderful projects on 9/11, Emmy award-winning projects and covering Superstorm Sandy. Did they ever want you to voice this?
Years ago I did. Years ago I did some on-air work. Back in, we're both from Iowa. And I did some on-air work in Iowa, and I did some on-air work in Miami. But it was too hard. It was too hard. And it was so, I always loved images. I have always, you know, since I was 14, I think I got paid $5 by somebody when I was 14 and been, you know, making images since then, and then working with Zelda now to make stories. And now the stories I can choose as opposed to working for somebody else. So it's been a great experience.
We're excited to have the Pattersons joining us here on the WBGO Journal and their film Being Gladys, screening Wednesday, March 27th at the Newark Museum. What's exciting about, as we talk about both of these films, is the fact we're talking about two women who are still alive and can still tell their stories. So from Being Gladys, we jump over now to Jessica and Ann Simmons, his wonderful work, I Can Only Be Mary Lane, and this living legend of American blues, primarily just known in the Chicago, though, area. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. She is very, she's very well known in Chicago among the, like, blues faithful who are in the scene, but not so much outside of that, and that's one of the things that the film explores, because once you hear her, she still has, you know, awesome pipes. She has an incredible story, and you kind of are left wondering, you know, how could this be?
You know, I made it a long way. Baby, just sing a blues.
She was born in Arkansas, and then she made her way to Chicago's West Side.
Yeah, she landed actually in Waukegan for the first couple of years, and then she then moved to the West Side, and that was in the 1950s.
When you first heard her sing, what did you think?
Oh, she is a she knows how to work a crowd. So when I, before even, you know, thinking about making a film about her, I would just go and, you know, when you live in Chicago, how could you not go and hear these awesome musicians? And so I would just go, and she'd be singing, and she would just interact with the crowd. And she really, I don't know, it's so magnetizing. You just can't help but, like, keep your eyes on her. And, you know, it's incredible that she's now 83, and she sounds like she did. If you hear some of her older stuff, she only recorded one album in her lifetime in the 90s, and she sounds really, like, pretty much the same. And so you're just kind of left in awe of, like, how can this, you know, I can, you know, I'm when you, you know, you're going up the stairs and you're kind of out of breath, and there's just, like, this woman here that's, like, has better pipes than you, and she's in her 80s. It's kind of awe-inspiring. And she just really knows how to interact with people and get them excited. And, you know, she always says her trademark saying is, you know, if you don't dig the blues, you got a hole in your soul. She really makes you, you know, fall in love with her without even knowing her.
If you take time and listen to it, then you know what I'm talking about.
Since you've been gone, yeah, seems like nothing is the same. That's why you got to let me, let me, let me.
Jessica is, as I mentioned, an assistant professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Dayton. I am a lover of history, so our filmmakers here are making me feel very happy because we're learning about two wonderful women who have made an impact on their respective communities and that maybe would not have been addressed in various ways. So what has been the reaction so far? You have won so many awards, Jessica, for your work through the years. What has been the reaction to I Can Only Be Mary Lane?
I think the biggest reaction is, like, people, you know, a lot of people love the blues still, and when they watch the film, they're kind of surprised that they've never heard of her, despite, you know, who, you know, she sang with over the years. It's so surprising that her career didn't take off in such a way, having sang alongside, like, Howlin' Wolf, Elmore James, Junior Wells, you know, these really big icons in the blues world. And you see her get to sing with some of those people in the film, and people are kind of just, like, stunned. What was it that, you know, kept her kind of, you know, only known within the Chicago area? And I think that's the biggest thing. And I think I've been told multiple times after the film is screened somewhere that, you know, they really feel like they got to know Mary and just want to go give her a hug. And I love that.
And Jessica, you have a wonderful clip in the film where she is celebrating her 82nd birthday. And who's there with her on stage? None other than Buddy Guy.
Girl, keep on cooking.
You know, Buddy, he's a good man. Always like to run around. But I told him a little thing when he came into Chicago Town. Buddy, you know you're a good man. Listen to what I say. If you don't do right, buddy, you better be on your way.
I was on my way when I came the other night.
You know, I really think that if I had one goal for the film, it's just that everyone would be able to get to hear her music and for her to be able to enjoy and know that people are getting to hear her music, you know, while she's still with us. And I think hopefully that just continues to happen. The film follows her trying to make an album, her second album, at the age of 82, and trying to get that done. a lot of people after the film, they want to know, like, what happened with the album and when can they get it and things like, of that nature. And so to me, that just warms my heart. The way that I actually started making this film was I going to a lot of the blues clubs, you know, kind of like the North Shore ones, where a lot of tourists go, kind of like myself. I'm not from Chicago originally. I would go to these really popularized blues clubs that are known all around the world and that are amazing. But you'd also hear musicians talk about, you know, the clubs that used to be on the west side and the south side of Chicago that are no longer around. And that was originally the thesis of the film, was, you know, what happened to these clubs. And Mary was one of the last people that could actually speak about this. When I went to go and tried to find people to interview, I was surprised to hear, you know, there's not so many of them around anymore. That was initially the project that I wanted to make. And then I interviewed Mary, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I want to follow you around. You know, there's something so timely about what you're trying to do. And also, you're right here, right now, and for who knows how much longer. I felt the agency and the importance in having that be the story to be much more urgent.
I Can Only Be Mary Lane is screening right here at WBGO on April 5th at 5 p.m. Also, we're joined here on the WBGO Journal by Ralph and Zelda Patterson, the directors of Being Gladys. You know, the three of you, I'll let you all speak together now, is that we see a lot of parallels here, don't we, between these two films, because we're talking about women who were had, I'm sure, to face some barriers and struggles mm-hmm. in order to just get their work out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'll let you address that first, Zelda.
Gladys lived a life where she took care of her family. She worked. But there wasn't a lot of places in and around the city of Newark where an artist, particularly an artist of color, could actually go spend the time, focus on their art.
When I opened the gallery, artists came from everywhere. I didn't know there was any artists in New Jersey until I opened that gallery. And they came swarming in, African-American artists, because they had no place. I didn't know there was no venue for them.
When we started interviewing artists that have known Gladys, some of them are much younger. Some of them consider Gladys their mentor. And we interviewed maybe 20 artists that she has touched throughout their lives, and many of them are still artists.
I want you to pick your best piece of artwork, and I'm going to tell you where to go. And she sent me to Gladys on Bergen Street to her gallery, and she invited me to join Black Women in Visual Perspective. And while I was there talking to her, Alita walked in with one of her paintings.
As we listen to our filmmakers, everybody's going, wow, they know their stuff. Yeah, they all have gone through master's work. These are terrific filmmakers, and I'm always amazed that Pamela Morgan has put together some of the most talented people in the world and bringing them to the 10th Annual Women in Media Newark Film Festival that runs through April 5th, from March 27th through April 5th. Ralph, touch upon, you know, since you've been in the communications and media business for a long time, have you met somebody that Gladys reminds you of, the struggles that she's gone through, the fight, the grit?
No. I mean, I've met people of her same age who've come through the same, African-Americans who've come through the same line of history. But she is unique. She is one of a kind. I think one of the adverbs that the people we talked to used was the word authentic, and that's exactly what she is. She defended who she was at all times. This is who I'm going to be, and she did not allow circumstances or other people to define who she was going to be. If you look at her timeline, I think she started teaching. She went back to school, I think, in her 50s and started a new career while she's still an artist, as a teacher. So she has always tried to facilitate other people's ambitions along with her own. She's always nurtured an atmosphere so that people could flourish.
Let's hear from her as part of Being Gladys. Set this up for us, Ralph, if you would, about her getting married.
Yes. Well, she, in 1947, she married Sal Grauer. And he's Jewish, she's Black. It wasn't about making any kind of statement. It was about the love that they shared.
It was a big, historic snowstorm that year. And for that reason, that's the morning that we traipsed. There was no transportation running. That we traipsed to City Hall and got married.
Tell us about selecting the music for this.
Well, that was a challenge and an education, because you had seven decades, and so I have my music library that I go to, and I put in the search criteria, and we pull up things that support the film but don't overwhelm, and it's time consuming, but I'm hoping that it pays off. We also have been offered some music just recently by Antoinette Montague, and we are looking for a place to make that work within the film, and I see some spots where that's going to help support the story as well. So it's been a joy. It's been a joy, but it's also been a lot of work.
And yeah, these, so much care gets put into these films. Jessica Inez Simmons joining us from the University of Dayton. Jessica, as you hear about Gladys, draw upon maybe some of the similarities when you think about the subject of your film, Mary Lane. What goes through your mind?
I think the biggest parallel between the two films and two strong female characters is this unwillingness to compromise and just, you know, be yourself despite any of, you know, the obstacles that are in one's way, and just to keep going and doing what, you know, you were born to do despite all those obstacles. The title of the film, I Can Only Be Mary Lane, is something that Mary actually said to me while she was, and is in the film, you know, during an interview when she's just like, you know, I can only be who I'm going to be, I can only be who I am. And if that's, you know, not enough for people, then, like, I'm not going to change. And I just think that perhaps is, to me at least, the biggest parallel, the courage to just be who you are authentically and, you know, let it fall how it may, but you're still going to be who you are. And that's one of the things I so greatly admire about, you know, just being able to be around Mary. Being a young female filmmaker, there are a lot of, I think, parallels between the film world and the music world. And, you know, both highly male dominated industries, it's really, I mean, so inspiring to me to see this woman just keep doing her thing and not compromising for anybody. And I think that it's a great message for anybody.
You know, you touched upon it, and we usually talk about this when we talk about the Women in Media Newark Film Fest, is that, in its 10th anniversary, by the way, here this year, we talk about, with the filmmakers, what a responsibility, and how do you see the film industry going right now, Jessica, for women filmmakers? Great strides have been taken, and exposure to some of the major films, but how about when it comes to, you know, the average filmmaker right now? What kind of strides have been taken, and where do you see the industry?
Well, I would say that, so much improvement and so much to be hopeful for. And I think, you know, just this last year, you know, not independent films, but with, you know, a lot of female protagonist being in front of the camera, you know, selling out box offices, that's really helpful. I would say that still behind the camera, in, you know, high up technical positions is, to me at least, the most need for improvement. For instance, you know, I just think that we need to have more women behind cameras and in editing. And I think that I'm hopeful, but I'd like to see a little bit more improvement. I think that one of the cool things that I've found just being, you know, independent filmmaker trying to make it and get, you know, resources and support is that there are more and more opportunities for female filmmakers seeking, you know, grants or resources. And I think that that's just wonderful.
Ralph and Zelda Patterson are co-facilitators at the Women in Media Newark, New Jersey Filmmakers Lab, from which documentaries on Gladys Grauer was conceived. Tell us about the lab and how it, and you know, it really works and how it's making a difference.
Well, when we Pam invited us in, and when we first started, we the word was put out that there was going to be a filmmakers lab in Newark, and we were very surprised when 30 people showed up for the lab, and they were people from different aspects of filmmaking. There were writers. There were one gentleman is putting a book together on children. There were filmmakers, actors. So it was it was really rewarding and inspiring to see so many people come together. And once we decided that the lab was going to do Gladys's story, we were able to put together four teams of five person teams together, and the people are just so committed. So it's great, you know. Right now, there are a number of people, filmmakers in the lab that have their own stories that they want to put into film, and we're at a day and age where technology has moved forward enough that we can do that, and we don't have to have millions and millions of dollars to tell a good story. So the lab is a real joy for us.
Yeah, and as for me, I wanted to learn. I spent the bulk of my life working in television news, always wanting to tell narrative film. And I challenged myself a number of years ago to write a script with a woman in the lead, because some time ago Zelda and I had these conversations about there's no roles for women and all the rest, and I wanted to write something for women, but here I am, a man, so the lab provided me a lab for myself where I can begin to understand more so what women want, need, how they see the world, their worldview, and it's been enlightening. And that opportunity is good. We have some other men who have shown up and who have been there, but overall, I think it benefits everybody to, you know, live in the same world with each other, and it's been great.
Zelda, you co-produced A Woman Under Construction, a full-length doc.
Yes.
Was on the life of a woman's struggle from substance abuse to peer counseling, and then your short film, Spirit Children, also following the life of a special lady. Tell us what was different this time around and why you feel it's so important to tell the stories of amazing women.
Actually, this time around, we had an opportunity to work with a number of other filmmakers, a number of other women. That was new for us. We've done a lot of work that's focused, and most of it was what we did, what Ralph and I had put together. But this time, we're really having to collaborate with individuals who provide music, other individuals who conduct interviews, who shoot. who do sound. So this is different because we now have a chance to work with teams of people. And it's just been a delight to do that. It expands us as we grow, you know, it helps us grow. And we're very hopeful. We hope that we offer other filmmakers something in the whole process.
Zelda and Ralph Patterson are the directors of Being Gladys, which is screening March 27th at the Newark Museum shortly after 5 o'clock. And it's about the life of 95-year-old Gladys Barker Grauer, who has advocated for the poor, the working class, and the liberation of herself as a black woman through the power of her own art. And when it comes to power, the singing of living legend of American blues in Chicago, Mary Lane, and that film, I Can Only Be Mary Lane, is screening right here at WBGO at 5 o'clock on April 5th. And we're also joined by Jessica Inez Simmons, who is the director of that film. Three great artists joining us, by the way, here on the WBGO Journal. It's always so much fun, and now Pam Morgan is finally behind me here, so I can reiterate, she always brings in the most talented people for this film fest, and I just have so much respect for her. When you spoke, Jessica, to the living legend herself, Mary Lane, you mentioned that she came up with the phrase, "I can only be Mary Lane." What did you find most fascinating about this lady? Maybe something that doesn't have to do with her singing, but just her tenacity, the way she is.
Oh, my gosh. Every time that I come over, if anyone comes over to her house, she, like, wants to feed you. And she'll cook, like, she'll cook a huge, you know, ginormous amount of food just for like one or two people because she wants to make sure that you're taken care of and that you're fed, you don't go home hungry. She just wants to take care of people. She's so, you know, for not having, I think, gotten the recognition she deserves in life, she is just so wants to make sure that other people feel like, you know, she appreciates them and loves them. And I felt that right off the bat. And I think that, I mean, you know, that's just the way that someone is. I think that she just has a way about her that is so welcoming and lovable. And, you know, despite having a hard time, you know, making a living, she's out there night after night, you know, trying to sing to, you know, pay her bills. She doesn't have, like, I would say, she hasn't given up hope, I guess, is what that is. And I think that the way that she interacts with other people, you would assume that she has, you know, everything she wants in life. And I think that there's something there to that I personally, you know, think is really admirable and something that I'd like to also work on. And just the way that she treats people so lovely. Also, I'd say that, mixed with that, she's also not afraid to, you know, say it how it is and stuff. And I think that, like, if someone, there's this instance in the film where someone doesn't want to sign her film, or sorry, there's this instance in the film where someone doesn't want the record that has just been produced because they don't like her voice. And her reaction is just so genuine. But it's also very, you know, she's not going to let it get to her, that she is just so, I don't know how to describe it. She's just so empowering and so great to know, because nothing, it seems like nothing really gets her down in the aspect of she's always going to keep trying despite all these things, and she's always going to treat people with respect and make sure that she knows, you know, make sure that you know how much she loves you. And I think that that's just a really crazy combination. Having, you know, just having to have to work so hard day in and day out. She never seems tired. She never seems like she wants to give up. She's always just right back out there doing her thing. And it bleeds into, you know, other aspects of her life. You know, just when we would come over and just hang out with her and not go and see her play or do music. She still has that kind of stage presence where she's just welcoming a dialogue and wants people, you know, just to come and hang out with her and, you know, let her feed you, which I just think is wonderful.
Jessica, do you plan to be here in Newark for the screening?
If I can, I'm still trying to figure out how to get there. But if it's in April, so I have a little bit more time to try and come up with the resources to get there.
Who would I to be to tell these three terrific filmmakers what their next project might be? But I'll be bold and say, wouldn't it be wonderful to have Gladys and Mary sit down and chat?
Yeah, that would be interesting. From the south side of Chicago?
That would be.
I have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. You know, because one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done is when I had the great saxophonist Jimmy Heath speak with Monty Irvin, the great baseball player, mm-hmm. about their love yeah. for Sarah Vaughan. And wow. both were like, well, I think she liked me more than she liked, you know, she liked you, when they would sit in the clubs in Chicago and they would sit there with Ernie Banks and everything like that. So wonderful stories that could be shared. But as I mentioned, you know, I'm a great lover of history, so I can appreciate the wonderful storytelling that goes on in these documentaries. Is there anything, Jessica, that you would like to say to the Pattersons or vice versa here?
I think for Jessica, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, because it's really important that we tell our stories. And there's so many stories out there like that need to be told. So I look forward to your work and seeing more of your work.
Well, thank you. I would also say that, you know, what you were speaking about earlier, just, you know, when you're speaking about being able to work together and have this like team and meet new people and grow, that, you know, made me so excited to move forward and, you know, to potentially work with people like you who are just so telling important stories as well, and in a way that is, it sounds very inclusive and very thoughtful and very beautiful.
Thank you.
Three award winners joining us on the WBGO Journal, all part of the 10th Annual Women in Media Newark Women's History Month Film Festival. Being Gladys will be shown on Wednesday, March 27th at the Newark Museum. The project of Ralph and Zelda Patterson, the directors of Being Gladys, and all the great work they have done through the years, especially about projects right here in Newark. And Jessica Inez Simmons, the wonderful award-winning filmmaker and interdisciplinary artist who joins us from the University of Dayton. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have all three of you here on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jessica, I will say, if any of that food that Mary Lane puts together, if it can be packaged, I can give you the address of the radio station that I'm sure the morning team would be thrilled to have.
Oh, my gosh. There was a month where my pants didn't fit, so I don't know. we'll see if there's any left over.
I appreciate that. Continued success to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bad luck. Real bad.